Just to kick off, you were generous about our audit, and I know you've been beavering away through it. I'm just wondering if you tell us what you think the weakness of our analysis is.
I don't think there's a weakness of the analysis. I think it's very strong, and I think it very much points out, you know, I think it would be an issue in any case, the decline in the number of hours of coverage of Wales and the way that Wales has been portrayed in national media. So I think the analysis is absolutely spot on. I think I would frame it within the context of everything that I just said in terms of some other parts of what's happened in the last 10 years, and the BBC have been hugely successful. So I think, you know, the production base, I think, is one of those things which has now got a momentum of its own, is really worth celebrating. I think the fact that Welsh audiences love the content is really worth celebrating. But I think you can do both of those things at the same time. You can absolutely say there's a real challenge about representing and understanding and discussing Wales at the same time as celebrating the huge successes that have gone alongside that.
Why is it you think that we struggle to get our voice heard? We get network portrayal, to get news coverage from London based, not just the BBC. Why do you think Wales struggles?
It's interesting. I mean, I've experienced this in a slightly different way, which I was a film producer for a little bit, and I made a film about Birmingham. And it was absolutely true that going around trying to get commissioners in London to understand that was tough. And it was only when we got some seed money for Birmingham that we were then able to go back to London and get the programme commissioned. So I think this is an issue that exists across the whole of the whole of the UK. I think it is something that must be crackable. It must be, you know, if you look at Hinterland, you look at the Dylan Thomas season, you look at the programmes which are being made here at Rothlock and others, there's clearly the creative strength outside of London to make fantastic programmes which can also play that job in portrayal, and it's something we're really determined to crack in the next 10 years. The only reason I'm slightly cautious about it is I know people have come and said that quite a lot in the past, and so far we've made some progress, but limited progress.
But you, from your experience, you think there is a problem with the way programmes are commissioned?
I don't think there's a fundamental problem. If you look at the quality of the programmes which are being made from here, so War and Peace or Doctor Who, these are absolutely brilliant programmes being commissioned brilliantly.
Back to your Birmingham example, you struggle to get a non-London programme commissioned by London commissioners.
Sure, I think that it's absolutely vital to have a range of different voices, and that all broadcasters have always struggled with that. So one of the ways that we addressed it in the last charter period was to have network supply targets, which now mean that Wales' share of the population, I think, is about 5%. I think we've got about 7.5%.
That's
programs.
Production, isn't it, rather than portrayal.
Exactly. So that's production. Mm-hmm. So that's a good basis. I think the question we now have to think through is how do we crack portrayal in the next charter period?
Because Tony Hall, let me just quote what Tony Hall said last April. I think it's worth quoting. And he came and gave a speech in Cardiff. And he said, English language programming from and for Wales has been in decline for almost a decade. There are some aspects of national life in Wales that are not sufficiently captured by the BBC's own television services in Wales. And I would include comedy, entertainment and culture in these categories. Does this matter? Of course it does. That was Tony Hall a year ago, making a plea for Wales, really, to start putting pressure on to lobby for a better licence fee settlement to address that. Now that a deal has been done on licence fee settlement, those words are hanging there, a little bit of a difficulty for him, because the initial proposals you've come up with don't really say how he's going to answer his own question.
So the need is still there, but you're absolutely right that the money makes it, that was saying there were greater needs and there's going to be an argument for greater money. We're now having to work out how we address this with less money. So, you know, we've already had to save 40% of our running costs in the last charter period. We're now taking on the cost of free licences for the over 75, so that will be another £650 million. That means we're going to need to save 20% of our money. Mm. So we're absolutely not saying that that need has gone away, but we're going to have to work really creatively together to work out how we can address it.
But you've got a budget of £4 billion. Your Director General has said, both he and you have cited how the fidelity of the Welsh audience to the BBC, the importance of the BBC to Wales because the ecosystem here is different. So you've said, and you've said from your own experience in commissioning, there is a problem in the BBC, the way we portray Wales. But you're not saying what you're going to do about it, other than give us more money, which isn't going to wash.
So I think there's a bit of catch-22 here, which is either we came up absolutely with our proposals right up front, and then we were ignoring the consultative process that we now go through, or we don't, and then we can be accused of not having come up with firm proposals. So we're very much in the second, but that's because we are genuinely looking for creative solutions about how we can do it. I think clearly portrayal through network money would be a very useful part of that, but there may be other things that we can do. I guess I would also say, I hope this is fair to say, that this is something that the whole of the industry needs to solve. I mean, 20 or 25 years ago, ITV would have been doing, I think, 12 hours a week of hours in Wales. That's now down to 5. Most of that is news. You know, Channel 4 has a network supply commitment, but it's 9% compared to 18% for the BBC. You know, there's a range of other people who are outside of the public service broadcasters. So you know, you've got an idea for a contestable fund. I think we all need to sit down and work out what can be done within the reducing money that we have for the next charter period,
what we can all do together. Okay, so let's just focus on what you can do, because you're here.
Yeah.
And you're the one who accepted that there's a problem. You mentioned using network spend, commission that differently, so Wales could be portrayed for programmes for the whole of the UK, not just for Wales. Because the examples you cited earlier, Romeo and Juliet and so on, the economic spin-off of that is understood and appreciated, although, you know, it's not all captured in the local economy, but a lot of it is. But that doesn't reflect Wales to the UK stage. So how can that change? Because that's not about more money, that's about using the current money differently.
Sure, that would be about getting better portrayal, and I think there has been some real achievements with that. As I say, Hinterland, the Dylan Thomas season, but I think we want to go much further on that.
But with respect, Hinterland was not commissioned for network. It has almost happened by accident.
No, that's exactly what I just said, Lee. So there have been absolute difficulties with that. There have been some successes, but I think we want to work out how, in the next 10 years, we can organise ourselves and work with partners to achieve better portrayal.
Let me give you another quote. This is something that Jana Bennett, who was then Director of Vision, which is a lovely title.
My favourite ever job title.
It's a good one.
Director of Vision.
She said in Cardiff just before the opening of Roth Lock, "None of this transfer investment will be entirely worth our while unless we gain a creative benefit. A creative benefit in terms of the voices we hear, the stories we tell, the pictures we paint. As the public service broadcaster, the responsibility falls squarely on our shoulders. We must now be more deliberate and systematic in how we address the issue of portrayal." That was 5 years ago. How has the BBC in the last 5 years addressed that challenge set by your own Director of Vision?
So that's exactly what I said a few answers ago, which is people have come and said we need to address portrayal effectively.
You've accepted there's a problem.
More effectively, if I can just finish my answer. And so I'm not going to come here and say there's an absolutely magic wand, because exactly like Jane Tranter said when she came to the session a few weeks ago, you have to make sure that you do this in a creatively successful way. So there are easy solutions that we could jump to which would achieve numbers but which wouldn't achieve creative success. What we've done, I think, very successfully with the production changes is do that in a way that has both creative success and then has also really embedded a group of people who are now totally based here. It's not lift and shift. It's an absolutely native production ecology. We want to work with you and discuss with partners how we achieve that, how we meet that challenge of portrayal more successfully, but also creatively in the next charter.
But with respect, you're saying what Tony Hall said, what Jana Benn said 5 years ago, there's a problem and we must do better. But the track record of doing better is not terribly encouraging. And in terms of British Bolding Creative, and what are the concrete proposals there to do better? What are you going to do differently?
Well, that's exactly what I've said. This is a period of consultation. If we came and said,
well,
okay,
we've got
our absolutely firm proposals, then we wouldn't be paying respect to the proper process of consultation.
But can you see why I'm sceptical? Because, you know, for the last 5 years, we've had senior BBC executives come and say there's a problem, and, you know, the sentences are well-crafted, but the output is no different.
I don't think it's fair to say that the output is no different. I mean, if you look at the amount of production coming from Wales, that is absolutely not the case. If you look at the, there has been a reduction in hours, but actually the audiences have stayed pretty similar. There's been real success with the strands of programmes that have happened in Wales, the specific Welsh programmes. They get fantastic audience appreciation. So what I'm saying is that overall there has been actually a period of success over the last 10 years. We agree that there's an issue to be addressed here. But in a world where our money was cut by 26% last time around, this time around will be cut by another 10%, we are going to have to work really creatively to address it. So we agree that there's an issue, but let's find a way of addressing it creatively over the next 10 years and working together to do it.
I wonder if, you know, part of the issue is the way the BBC is organised, how centralised it is. You know, 50% roughly of the BBC staff is in London. All the senior decision makers are in London. The drama commissioning process is highly centralised in the hands of two or three people, very big budget. They're reflecting their own cultural prism, and we're getting the same results time and again. So I wonder if there's an opportunity within this process where change has to happen. You've mentioned production devolution, which has worked, but I wonder if there is an opportunity to think about decentralisation more generally of decision-making around the UK. Is that part of your thinking?
I think that's a very good point, and I think one of the things that we're very keen to explore is what the governance arrangements could be in Wales as our constitution changes. And I think there's also a very important point to link to that, which is, at the moment, Rodri has a limited... who runs BBC Wales, has a limited control over Welsh services, because most of those are set within service licences which are not about Wales. And I think one of the things we would like to explore is whether there's a possibility of having a service licence for Wales and having devolution of that money so that the money that's being spent on Wales can genuinely be directed from Wales. It's a different issue from the portrayal and network commissioning point that you made, but I think that would be a very effective way of making sure that we have more ability to flex according to local demands. I think there's a very important point to make also about London and the rest of the country, which is, it's worth saying that at the start of the last charter, the vast majority of staff were in London. It's now 50-50. But actually, the magic comes when you get the brilliant combination of local and national. Actually, if you look at something like Doctor Who, having something which is made in Wales for the UK, but with that global distribution of BBC worldwide, actually has a fantastic virtuous circle. And I think what we want to try and do is make the most of centres around the UK, but also the fact that London is one of the most successful media markets in the whole world, and make that into a win-win.
But one of these central points of the audit is that at a time when Wales is getting more powers, we're probably going to be calling ourselves a parliament after the next election. We're going to get tax-raising powers. You know, as a polity, we are maturing, but our ability to inform that and to make it real and to challenge, and that's the key bit, the ability to do that is declining because the information just is drying up. You know, a year ago, half the people in Wales thought that Jeremy Hunt ran the NHS. Mm. Now, that's not healthy. Mm. So the BBC has a role to play in that.
Absolutely right. And so on news, we are consulting about how you get the balance right between UK news and nation's news to get those agendas right. Again, I think following the King report, that's something that is better now in terms of signposting people to what issue matters, but there's more that we can do. I also think this is an area where digital can make a real difference. If we can have a really effective digital platform for news, for the iPlayer, for our curriculum, that is something which can allow us to meet exactly those kinds of needs in a way that may be possible within some of the funding constraints we have. I'm not saying that's the only thing we should do, but I'm also saying let's not ignore it, because, you know, if you look, for example, at how people got information about the general election result, they're getting more and more of their information from digital. So, you know, along with the great radio services, we want to see what digital can do to address this challenge.
I'm sure we'll come back to this in questions later, but just in terms of radio, you mentioned in your presentation that the highest consumption of radio across the BBC is in Wales. But the reach of Radio Cymru and Radio Wales is declining. It's only around 400,000 out of a population of 3 million. So by definition, most people in Wales are getting their radio from non-Welsh sources, from network radio. And network radio hardly mentions Wales. Now, one of the proposals we've echoed, others have mentioned it, is about a specific news opt-out on Radio 1 and Radio 2 to serve a Welsh audience. Even though that's been rattling around for a year or so, the response from the BBC hasn't been... Well, there hasn't been one.
Well, let me try and give you one. So I think it's an interesting idea. It's absolutely...
Or is it that bad?
So the great advantage of it is you could have news opt-outs on services that people use, and you can immediately see why that could reach a large number of people very effectively. The difficulty with it is distribution. Obviously, Radio 1 and Radio 2, the Welsh versions of them aren't just heard in Wales, and so you would have people... in parts of England who are getting radio opt-outs which are about Wales. So that's something that we would need to look at. I mean, as I say, as part of a consultation, that is an idea which is very much on the table. It would be easy to do in digital, in purely internet distribution. Again, DAB, not completely straightforward. But that's something that we are very happy to discuss with people and look at. And that is exactly the kind of creative solution that we want to see discussed over the next year or so.
So the only barrier to that is technological, is it?
I think you would have editorial things that you would need to work out, but I don't. From the discussions we've had, I don't think that those are those can't be overcome.
Okay, I want to touch on governance. You mentioned there's a proposal to get rid of the BBC Trust and create a unitary board. So could you just explain what that is, and more specifically, how does that affect S4C? Because ever since S4C was part of the licence fee, S4C has been in a not good place in terms of its independence. It's been vulnerable. And I think there are anxieties about having a unitary board. How would S4C maintain its editorial and governance independence in that structure?
OK, so a unitary board would be a little bit like a board of a PLC. So you would have an independent chairman, you would have a set of non-executive directors. They would be the majority of the board. But in addition to the normal responsibilities that a company board would have, the unitary board would also have responsibilities for public involvement, for pursuing the public interest, potentially for weighing market impact with public value on some of the...
And setting budgets.
Setting budgets, but absolutely. So
S4C's budget would be set by the unitary board.
So that would be for the BBC. There is, again, a debate going on about what the appropriate arrangements would be for S4C. As I say, we have a fantastic partnership with S4C. I think we... if you had a governance arrangement for Wales, then it is possible that you could look at what S4C's role would be within that and whether that would be the right way of doing the distribution of the funding and the oversight. Or it could be done at a different level. It could be done through whichever regulator succeeds the BBC Trust. There are pros and cons to both. I guess I would say in terms of independence, arguably it's better having relationships with a regulator or with some kind of broadcasting governance arrangement in Wales than directly with the government. As broadcasting organisations, it's always a bit uncomfortable to have a direct relationship with government, but Ian can, I'm sure, comment on that later. I would also say there's real benefits coming from this partnership. I mean, you only need to look at the redevelopment in the centre of Cardiff, which is going to come from us having been able to work together on that building. I think someone was saying that's going to be £1 billion of economic regeneration over the next 10 years. Having us working together, I would say, actually, has been something which has been very mutually beneficial.
OK, and obviously the iPlayer platform is another example of that. But are you anticipating there'll be national representation from Wales on that unitary board?
So that's not for us to decide. There's a review which is being led by David Clementi, and he will provide advice to government on that. We're being, you know, as the people who are being regulated, we're being relatively circumspect about what we say about that, because it's a bit like the accused trying to tell what the jury should be.
Welcome to our world. If I understand what you said correctly, one of the options potentially to be considered is allowing a Welsh bit of the board to have some governance over BBC Wales and S4C. Is that part of the option?
That would be one option, yeah.
Okay. Might that be seen as devolution of broadcasting by the back door?
That's an interesting question. I think we would see it as reflecting the changing constitutional settlement of the UK. And you know, S4C has always had a very strong relationship with Welsh institutions anyway, so I don't know whether it would be a fundamental change of principle.
OK, I'm rattling through the things here. In terms of the changing shape of the UK, obviously you're getting a lot of heat from Scotland, and I understand it when senior executives go there, they howl down in public meetings, which is not a healthy environment to make cool-headed decisions, but you're getting a lot of pressure from Scotland. We're far more meek and evidence-based.
Are you saying the Scots are not evidence-based?
Well, people can draw their own conclusions. One of the things you're considering is a Scottish Six. What would a Scottish Six mean for Wales? What would happen to us if there was a Scottish Six?
So we're very much in consultative mode, and we haven't put forward a proposal. But you know, there is an issue to be worked out about the balance between UK and nations agendas on our news. And it's not just about what happens at 6 o'clock, it's what happens across the whole of the UK. You know, clearly, Scotland's constitutional changes are a few steps advanced of where they are in Wales. But as Wales changes, there may be similar questions that arise here. But, you know, that's something we're very much looking forward to hearing people's views about, because when you talk to the audience has quite a wide range of views. You know, the 6 o'clock news, the UK-wide 6 o'clock news, is the most popular news programme in the UK, getting more popular, including Scotland, actually. So I think there's, you know, interesting arguments on both sides, and that's something we really want to hear people's views on.
You know, I guess you don't want to concede the Scottish Six, but if you did concede
I didn't say that. I think no, I'm just saying we don't have a proposal.
What would you mean for us? Is it possible to have what are the consequences, let's think it through, of an England and Wales news service?
I mean, I think I'd be interested in your view. You know, there's clearly a bigger overlap between the agendas in England and Wales. You have very successful 6:30 news. So, you know, is the level change such that that would be something people would want to consider in Wales? You know, it's probably more for people in this room to form a view on whether that's needed now or whether that's something to leave for a different day.
Okay, well, perhaps we'll pick that up in questions. And to ask you briefly about Ruth, the future of Ruth Lock.
Yep.
Obviously a big part of the positive story you've got to tell this morning and continuously is the success of Ruth Lock. Yep. And as a network production centre. As part of the changes you're doing to respond to the licence fees, the creation, yep, of something called BBC Studios, yep, which is essentially a removing production from an in-house facility to an arm's-length facility, so it wouldn't be part of the BBC. Obviously, that opens up the possibility of privatisation at some point. But that would mean taking Ruth Lock outside of the BBC and putting it separate. What impact could that have on the provision, the success story you've been saying this morning? If you were to take that outside of the BBC, then all bets are off.
We're not taking it outside the BBC. Very important to say. It would be wholly owned. It would be part of the BBC.
It wouldn't be part of BBC Wales, though, would it?
I mean, it would be part of the BBC. It would have its own focus.
It's telling us that the silence is coming up in 5 minutes.
Yeah. So I think this is something that is absolutely vital for Wales in particular, because what happens at the moment is that BBC programme makers, although they're doing absolutely brilliant pieces of work, operate on a not very even level playing field. If you work for an independent company, you can make significantly more money, you can sell your company, you can pitch your ideas to anybody. If you're the BBC, you do have the protection of an in-house quota, but you don't have any of that creative freedom or the financial upside. And so what we're saying is, if you want to preserve and ideally build on the programme-making strength at the BBC, we want to create a part of the BBC that thinks only about that, a BBC Studios, that we would get rid of the in-house quotas, so that would mean that we would be freeing that up so that independents and in-house could pitch for that so we can get the best ideas on screen. But I think that would be a huge opportunity for Wales and Ruth Lock, because it would allow Ruth Lock to grow. It would allow the Welsh production base of the BBC here to pitch to broadcasters around the world, to pitch to other broadcasters in the UK, and potentially to grow in the future. And I think that the real danger is if we continue to rely on a quota and on protection rather than having a level playing field, then actually we will have a dwindling in-house base rather than potentially, if we get the right ideas, a growing in-house base. Now, if we're to do that, we also have to convince independent producers and our other broadcasters that it's being done on a level playing field, that there's no cross-subsidy from the licence fee. But we would be absolutely insane not to build on the huge strength in drama and in other areas that happens in Wales. So, you know, we very much would want to persuade people in this room that this is something which is vital the government says yes to, because it's the way of creating growth in BBC production in Wales, rather than accepting in the end, over time, a dwindling production base.
But its success has been built on the BBC saying you must produce this programme here.
Sure.
If you're going to stop saying that, you said earlier that Ruth Lock was genuinely self-sustaining. Well, you can't say that.
We're not saying you don't have to make it here. We're absolutely saying we want to stick to the production quotas. So we would stick to the NSR quotas, which actually being overachieved in Wales. And that's kind of my point, that actually, you know, we made a commitment here, brought public investment here, actually it is, we're not going to get rid of the protections, but it is genuinely becoming self-sustaining in that you've now got four studios in Wales, you've got productions coming in from a wide range of people, you have an ecology which we can build on, and we want to make it a success story. What BBC Studios would allow us to do is to have that part of the organisation pitch to more people and have not the same financial rewards as happens in the independent sector, but to have greater financial rewards.
I'm sure we'll come back to that after the break. Just to finish before we stop to reflect, First Minister said yesterday that BBC's provision of English language programme was lamentable. Believe me, this is an up-tempo of his rhetoric. Now, obviously, you're getting heat from Scotland. Previously, Wales has been pathetically grateful for what we've been given. Across the, you know, not just in terms of the BBC, just in terms of our attitude to the world. Are you feeling that maybe you're going to have to work harder to keep the Welsh content?
It's not about keeping the Welsh content.
I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but in terms of the pressures you're dealing with.
It's about serving audiences properly. And, you know, the only constraint we have is finances. You know, we have to find an extra £700 million of funding. There are lots of pressures, as you say. I think the Scots would probably like an extra £100 million. First Minister here said £30 million. I think. So if we had to find another £900 million of savings to... £900 million in total, potentially that would have to start to have a real effect on the quality of our services overall. So we're absolutely committed to addressing the needs of audiences in Wales. We just need to work together with you and with other people in this room to do so in a creative way and to make the most of all of the resources of the players in Wales.
You said there's a point you made the last time you came to Wales. There's a trade-off between provision for the nations and the maintenance of quality at a network level.
So that's why you're right to start with portrayal and network money, because in a way that's a win-win. If we can have great programmes on the network, which are also doing a great job for portrayal, then that allows us to do that in a world of declining resources. I wasn't saying that there's a sort of trade-off of principle saying one matters more than the other. I was just saying as our money is being cut by 10%, we're having to find savings of 20%. Finding extra money is going to be really, really hard, so we have to try and see whether we can do it from efficiency, from better use of technology, from working with partners. Because actually, you can see in Cardiff there is, if you take it out of one pot, potentially it will have to come. If you put it into one pot, potentially it comes out of the other pot. So just to illustrate it, if we decided we want to have a lot of money just on Welsh programming rather than putting it into network, that could end up affecting the amount of drama going into Roath Lock. So all I'm saying is the money has to come from somewhere. We want to work really, really hard with you and others to see how we address the needs. So it's not belittling the need, it's just saying, unfortunately, our money is going to be cut in the next licence fee deal, so there isn't an extra pot of money to put into this.
In terms of portrayal, in terms of network news, in terms of Wales being better reflected by the BBC to Wales, you're committed to do something different than you've been doing.
Absolutely right.